88.5 News.
From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. It's the Computer Guys and Gal. It's the first Tuesday of the month, and you know what that means. Time to pull down the window shades, send the kids out to play, and face the hard truth. You're actually looking forward to your monthly visit with Computer Guys and Gal. This month, we'll get to the bottom of all of those 3G wireless and iPhone rumors. We'll help you figure out which new technologies could substantially enhance your summer vacation. We'll speculate about Bill Gates' future now that his day job at Microsoft is in the past. And, of course, we'll answer your hardware and software questions. And on hand to do that are our computer guys and gal. John Gilroy is a computer guy and director of business development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. Mr. Gilroy.
Greetings, Earthling.
Bill Harlow is a former Mac genius and now a Macintosh consultant.
Former Earthling.
Mid-Atlantic consultant. Bill, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Kojo.
And Allison Druin is director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. She joins us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts, where she is apparently moonlighting as a photographer, a wilderness photographer, because everything she wants to talk about today has to do with photographs and about finding your way around. What's going on, Allison?
I'm directionally challenged, Kojo. I don't. If it doesn't have a GPS attached to it, or I don't know where I am. But I am in the beautiful Berkshires, and it's amazing. But it keeps raining nonstop. So. Yeah.
But you seem to have this photo obsession. You seem to be taking photographs with every device in sight.
Well, there's all this new stuff out for photos to actually geostamp them, to say instead of, you know, having your grandmother write on the back of that photo that ends up bleeding, you know, in 25 years later, this is the top of the Rockies. You can actually digitally do that. And it's awesome. It's really cool. There's iFi just came out with something for about $130, and it lets you do this with local Wi-Fi connections.
You know, Kojo, I didn't know the Betty Ford Clinic was in New Hampshire. Is it?
Well, apparently.
Oh, you're just jealous. Apparently you're just jealous.
And he, of course, John, needs that geostamp because he can't usually remember where he's been on vacation.
Right. I may be in the Betty Ford Clinic now myself.
But you can join the conversation at 800-433-8850 with the computer guys and gal, 800-433-8850, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. The one thing all of you want to talk about is the new $199 iPhone. I feel gypped because I paid $400 for mine 6 months ago, and now they're coming out with the $200 iPhone. Is it a good deal?
Well, my question is, how much are you paying for your data plan?
Oh, I can't reveal that. It's much too much.
Well, the answer is a lot less than you'd be paying with a new one. Right now, for example, my unlimited data is $20 a month. You get a new iPhone.
Minus 20.
Right, and it's up to $30. And then if you want to send text messages, those are now an additional $5. So you're looking at potentially $15 more for the equivalent service.
Yeah, I think it's a bait-and-switch deal where you're paying just about what you're paying now, but you get to brag about only paying $199 is what it looks like. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's in line with other smartphones, but yeah, it just shows that the earlier iPhone release was a pretty good deal for the service package.
So instead of a smartphone, this is smart marketing.
Exactly.
How do you feel about it, Allison?
I think it's pretty neat that finally fast data. And I actually do like the idea that it does have GPS on it because I'm directionally challenged. Real GPS as opposed to Skyhook sort of Wi-Fi kinds of stuff. But I do, I sort of agree it is a bait and switch. In a couple of years, it's just the same, it's the same equivalent anyway.
Yeah, I promise you no one's going to pay attention to that. They're going to look at the entry-level price and say, oh boy, I can't wait to get one now.
Right, it's a typical American, hey, it's a free phone. You're locked into high service charges for 2 years. And the Europeans go and say, hey, let's put the pencil to paper and decide what the better plan is.
But it's going to sell. It's not like another $500 phone with all these bells and whistles. It's a cheaper device. A lot of people are going to buy it, which means a great platform for developers too.
And people, if you work at Kojo Industries and you're a high-level executive like Mr. Namdi here, you finally have your email get to push to you. So there's some advantages there, and there could be some goodies coming up with this SDK.
As I recall, Allison, it was your significant other who persuaded me to buy an iPhone.
Ooh,
Ben
he's the one,
Peterson,
huh?
Still alive?
Oh, he is not only is he still alive, he is so still in love with his iPhone. And in fact, he is making noises that he's going to give me his old iPhone so he can get the new iPhone.
What a generous soul he is, isn't he?
I love him to pieces. He's so wonderful. He's with my children right now dancing around the Berkshire. So anyway, but the real thing is I do think it's got some additional capabilities, and the speed. And the speed is definitely a real win, too. So I think there is some merit to the new one as well.
The only thing that seems to interest John Gilroy as much as the new iPhone is a website, catsthatlooklikehitler.com.
Love that site.
Is he obsessed or what?
No, but there's a new one out.
Bringing it up.
The new one out is, like Hitler, Allison? That's the question. Do you think like Hitler? You can go to politicalcompass.org and take a test and find out where you stand on the scale. I took the test, and I was slightly to the, right of Attila the Hun. And I don't know where Bill and Kojo is going to wind up here, but fascinating sites. You always got to think.
800-433-8850 is the number to call if you have computer issues that you'd like to discuss so that we can get the computer guys and gal off of whatever it is they seem to want to discuss. Bill, Mac is dead. Long live Mobile Me.
.Mac is dead. It was their online service that Apple provided before. It was $99 a year. You had some storage space and email address and, you know, an easy way to do things like upload iPhotos, which a lot of people liked, but a lot more were like, that's a lot of money for not too much value. So we were talking about the iPhone and push, and this is Mobile Me, which is what it's called now, is sort of like what they're saying, exchange for consumers. So exchange would be you get push email to your iPhone. You can have an online calendar and online contacts. And when you make changes to those either on the computer, on another computer, or on your iPhone, they all sync up immediately live. So it's very elegant. You don't have to worry about...
What's a push email?
It means that when someone emails you, you get it right away. There's no, you know, going on your device and checking or having it check every half hour. Just as soon as it comes in, you have it.
Instead of pulling, that would be the contrast.
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, Allison Druin?
Yes?
Please say happy birthday, Bill.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Thank you. What'd you get me?
See, Bill Carter is here trolling for gifts today.
Yes. It figures.
Because I can drink now.
You know, you can drink now. You're so old, I can't stand it. Oh, you probably want something that has to do with Star Wars. I know your type.
Oh, he wants the Dash Express GPS. What's that, Bill?
That, actually, it's funny you were talking about traveling and being directionally challenged earlier, because I just got back from a trip in Pennsylvania, and we used a Garmin GPS. But this one actually rather than just getting satellite data, it's two-way. It actually has Wi-Fi built in with a high-gain antenna. It can talk to a cellular data network, a very fast one. So in little things like searches, you can get immediate searches on Yahoo, for example, of things in the area. But the coolest thing is the traffic. It anonymously updates your position to a central server so that as more Dash Expresses are in the area, they get a really good profile of how traffic truly moves in your area. And if there are live traffic incidents, you learn right away.
You know what amazes me about these Garmin things? People driving on the road, $4 an hour gasoline, the only position they're going to be in is in debt because gas is so expensive. And on the one hand, and all these new devices out there, these Garmin and find this and find that. I see people in the last 4 or 5 months drastically reducing their travel, and people, only the wealthy people, really go to New Hampshire. Is that right, Allison?
Speaking of
I stopped in Pennsylvania. Get a state.
Massachusetts.
Speaking of garments, John Gilroy has pulled out the Hawaiian shirt today. It's the official announcement that summer is here. But you know what? Allison thinks is even cooler, Bill, the $150 ATP GPS photo finder option.
Well, you know, I am sorry to miss that shirt. But anyway, here's the thing, okay? With the iFi thing I was telling you about earlier, the iFi memory card, you actually need Wi-Fi to stamp it. But with the GPS photo finder, the ATP, you have to carry this little extra box that sort of looks like an extra, camera. And then you put in your memory card into this little box. It's very cool. It's green. And then basically it stamps the location. And so there's no need to actually send the pictures back to your PC to actually do this. Now, the problem is you're traveling with screaming children in the back seat and you're moving around and so on, it may be hard to remember to stick your memory card into that extra little box. This one's a little bit more expensive. This is $150 as opposed to $129 option.
Allison Druin joins us from the studios of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts. She's our computer gal and director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. In our studio is John Gilroy, director of business development at SolutionsDevelopers.com, and Bill Harlow, a former Mac genius. He's now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. We're taking your calls at 800-433-8850. Here is Jill in Washington, D.C. Jill, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. I just wanted some advice on Mac versus PC. My two-year-old ripped off 30% of the keys on my Dell laptop.
Oh, God bless you.
Why
30%?
You couldn't reach the other two-thirds, huh?
Go right ahead, please.
Before he finished the job, including the space bar. So I sent my husband an email saying, can you please bring home an extra keyboard from the office with no spaces? And when he got home, I said, I need a new computer. Can I please get a Mac? He's not so convinced. So I just wanted your input on compatibility between our two machines and using Quicken, which we use for our finances, on the Mac and the Microsoft Office package on the Mac.
Bill Harlow.
Well, I would say if you guys have another PC in the house and you're concerned about compatibility, you know, just think carefully because, you know, a lot of programs, I'm not sure about Quicken, and I think you might actually have to convert the data to get it between a Mac and a PC if that's a concern of yours. If you're going to be using a little more independently, it might be a good time to experiment. Just keep in mind that, you know, just be careful because if you get the Mac and you decide, you know, I really need to do a lot of this Windows stuff, that's extra expense to get another copy of Windows and a copy of Parallels or installing Bootcamp and rebooting into the Windows to do that. So, you know, look at why you want the Mac. You know, if you're going to use things like the iLife package, if you're concerned about security, you know, that sort of thing, those would be the reasons to get it. If you're just curious about it, but you're also concerned about compatibility, it may not be the time to jump right in.
John?
Oh, wait. I don't agree. I'm sorry. If you've got a two-year-old in that house, okay?
Yes.
And I love you to pieces,
and
Bill, okay? Oh, my goodness. You need a Macintosh, and I'm going to tell you why, okay? Because, first of all, they're not going to be able to peel off the keys as easy. But second...
Oh, I don't know about that. I've seen some things.
Allison, John Gilroy is trying to kick you under the table, but go ahead.
Oh, wow. Well, that, you know, Hawaiian shirt, it's blaring over here. Anyway, but here's the thing, is that the interface for the Mac is so much better for kids. And we have a hybrid house, if you will, of PC and Macintosh. And we're able to, we got MacBook Pros, and so we're able to, with a larger disk space, be able to partition and be able to just switch easily. We don't even have boot camp easily between the PC operating system and the Mac. So and so we do this regularly. And so I think it's working really well. And I got a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old, so I'm on the side of go for the Mac.
Now, How about you, John Gilroy?
Now, Allison, do you or do you not have two PhDs in computer science in your house?
Are we getting three different answers here? This is great information.
I mean, if you have two PhDs in computer science in your house, maybe you can play this juggle. But most people have a hard time putting dinner on the table with these kids. I mean, if you want something simple and reliable, I mean, you know, if they're going to trash it, I'm not going to trash something expensive. Just trash a piece of inexpensive equipment.
Jill, what have you decided?
Marry a PhD?
I am married to a tech guy, but I think I'll order an edited version of the show to play for my husband because
yeah,
all right.
I'm excited about the Mac. And
no, they are cool. I love mine.
We'll see. Thank
cool, Lamborghini.
Honey, I love
cool.
you, and I'm glad I'm not married to any of those crazy people on that show, right? Thank you. Thank you very much for your call. Here's an email we got from Kurt in Midlothian, Virginia. In a previous show, you guys talked a lot about avoiding power surges, and I'm wondering, what about turning the computer on and off, which would seem to be a lot like a power surge? Aside from the power consumption, it's healthier for the computer to turn it off overnight or to leave it on 24/7?
Do I love this question? We get this question every 6 months for the last 17 years, and
yes.
I got a fun answer this time. You can Google Mr. Electricity, and he's a guy who looks like Tiny Tim.
doesn't look like a cat.
No, thank goodness he doesn't. Maybe his cat looks like Hitler, but he doesn't. He looks like Tiny Tim, and he has a whole website on how much juice notebooks take? And his answer is real simple. It depends on the size of the computer. If you have an old CRT with a big video card and you run it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you could spend up to $400 a year on electricity. However, if you're very conservative, have a small machine, just use a couple hours a day and don't have a CRT, it doesn't draw as much. So the answer is it depends as far as energy consumption goes. But as far as, you know, if energy were free, I guess that was a 10-year ago thought. No one thought about electricity. However, if it's free, I would say turn it off every night just because it's good to restart the system, and turning a computer on and off doesn't damage it at all. It's designed to do that. And with Windows machines, it probably doesn't hurt enough with the Mac. What's the Mac
Bill.
Advice?
Well, they still say, you know, turn it off every now and then. I wouldn't say every night. I mean, my personal habit is, you know, I use it several times a day, usually not too much of a break. So it's usually asleep. If I'm going to be away for a while, I turn it off. And if I'm going to be on vacation, I unplug it, just because power surges, you know, even if you have a surge protector, you're not 100% safe until you really decouple it from the wall.
Summertime, Washington, D.C.,
oh, yeah.
Storm coming in, just because you're plugged in, you could get zapped.
We have that practice here. Also, we turn the computer guys and gal off every now and then to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with them. But you can still call us, 800-433-8850, or shoot email to kojo@wamu.org.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. I'm Matt McCleskey. Around the rest of the WAMU radio community this hour, on WAMU's HD Channel 3, it's Day to Day. And the Tomcat Reader Show is live on WAMU's Bluegrass Country. That's HD Channel 2. You can listen to that at bluegrasscountry.org as well. Coming up at 2 o'clock here on WAMU 88.5, it's Tell Me More from NPR News.
Next time on Tell Me More, as we continue our special broadcast from New York, we catch up with the Mocha Moms of New York City as they talk about raising kids in the city that never sleeps. I'm Michelle Martin. That's next time on Tell Me More from NPR News.
And that's coming up at 2 o'clock today here on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from CDWG. With thousands of technology products in stock, they're there to get public sector customers what they need when they need it on purchasing vehicles specific to their organizations. CDWG, the right technology right away.
And to honor the 4th of July, we present American Roots this Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. We'll hear music and opinion about patriotism as pluralism and sometimes protest from guests Merle Haggard and Joan Baez. Plus, we'll feature American anthems from the late king of bluegrass, Jimmy Martin, and from the Grateful Dead. It's a star-spangled edition of American Roots Friday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on WAMU 88.5, where now the Kojo Namdi Show continues at 12:24.
Where we're talking with the computer guys and gal, and if you have trouble remembering all of the stuff that was mentioned here today to help you with your computer, then you can go to WAMU.org and click on Computer Guys, or KojoShow.org and click on Computer Guys, and you'll find it all there. We're talking with Bill Harlow. He is a former Mac genius, now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. John Gilroy is Director of Business Development at SolutionsDevelopers.com, and our computer gal is Allison Druin, who is Director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park, and today, absolutely obsessed with being able to find where photographs have been taken. She just checked with researchers at Carnegie Mellon.
I'm obsessed.
And I'm very excited.
What did the researchers tell you, Allison?
They can do it. Okay. Now, you can't buy this yet, all right? Okay. This is great research. But if you go and take a picture now, they can automatically analyze that photo and compare it with everything in Flickr online, and they're using computer vision and basically pattern recognition to actually do this. But they can they don't need you to actually. It's not like you pushing it; it's them pushing it to you, and it's awesome. So it's quite a breakthrough that it says that there's enough GPS. Oh, come on!
Is that where they get the pictures of cats that look like Hitler? Is that what these guys in Carnegie Mellon do all day long?
Please continue.
You know,
Allison,
you are so jealous. Anyway, but it's very cool. So I think some of this some of the softwares will find its way out into what you can buy pretty soon.
I can see John Gilroy. Now, honest, I was in the library.
Definite.
That just looks like a bar.
Can you get more definite than that?
800-433-8850. Let's move on to Tim in Ashburn, Virginia. Tim, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Tim. Hi, Tim.
Sound like you're having a good time.
No, that's not true at all.
We have a guy named Tiny Tim. What, no. Yes, what's your question, Tim?
Tim, sorry. Yeah, this is Tim. I'm calling about mapping, M-A-P. Back down a little bit. My sister lives in Maryland, and she's disabled. And I'm trying to come up with some way of getting a computer hookup in her house. She doesn't have an inline phone in her house. All she has is a cell phone. And, you know, the cheapest way going, and, you know, and all she has is an old, like an XP-type machine with not a lot of anything. So I don't know, and I've heard of, you know, that you can some way hook up using Bluetooth her phone to create like a network and use that to access the Internet. Is that true? Can I do that? Or any suggestions what I can do to help her out?
Well, you can do that. It's basically, if you have a more modern cell phone, and let's say it does have Bluetooth and your computer has Bluetooth, or you add Bluetooth with a card or a little USB device, then a lot of cell phone providers offer what they call a tethering plan, which either over a cable or using Bluetooth, you can use the little use the phone like a modem, you know. And if you have a 3G phone, it can be a decent experience. But I believe it's pretty costly. I mean, if you're looking at doing that, it's probably a lot more cost effective to just get like basic DSL or even dial up if that's all you need. The tethering is I've had it be flaky when I've used it, and like I said, the more you use it, past a certain point, they charge you a lot more to do that.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah. You know, Tim, everyone is broadcasting Wi-Fi everywhere these days. I went to the shop to drop off my car yesterday, turned on my computer, bang, there were three hotspots I could just tie into, just all over the place. So I would get a notebook computer, go over to that house, and just see if some foolish neighbor like Bill is broadcasting his Wi-Fi.
Are you telling him to steal Internet?
No, I'm just saying,
no,
see if it's
John!
Available, and then do what the best thing is to do.
John!
But she has very limited income, and... Yeah, so do I, as far as that goes. But I'm just trying to find the best way to make it. How about an air card? Would do any good? Do you have to have a PC or a laptop for an air card to work?
When you say an air card, are you referring to like Wi-Fi card or like a cellular modem?
EVDO.
Right. Well, if you're talking about EVDO, again, that's going to be really expensive, and the cheapest option, if it's just going to be used in the house, is to get, you know, basic broadband. You know, just a basic DSL line would be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And, Tim, thank you very much for your call, and good luck. John Gilroy, Tom indicated that his sister was running XP Microsoft Chat June 30th as the general end of availability for Windows XP. What now are the options of we XP users?
Well, June 30th... Big day yesterday. Bill Gates was put out to pasture, and XP apparently was put out to pasture, and I don't know how serious it is. InfoWorld collected 200,000 signatures on a petition to save XP, and Steve Ballmer just kicked it out the door, didn't care. They're making some kind of a subtle transition here. I think if you call up a vendor now, chances are you may be able to get XP thrown in. Some vendors like Dell are playing a strange little dance where they're charging you $50 to add XP, and then they throw the CD for Vista in the box and act like it's not there. I mean, it's a very strange game.
Well, remember, you're buying Vista, but you can get a downgrade license.
Downgrade XP.
You're downgrade because your Vista's broken. Remember that, okay?
And in the middle of all this, we have this crazy man, Ballmer, who is talking about the next version of Windows. And so people are saying, well, you know, I want to keep XP, maybe look at the next version. So it's a push and pull. And my crystal ball broke many years ago. I don't know what's going to happen. I think there's going to be XP available for a few more years. Many large organizations are resisting Vista for some driver issues.
As
mostly.
I was thinking, Bill, even as the complaints continue about Vista, but you don't think Vista's that bad?
No, I mean, all the complaints are valid. I'll say that. You know, a lot of people who rely on, you know, various critical pieces of software or hardware, you know, they're not going to want to go through all this troubleshooting. I've played with it personally on my computer, and it's, you know, it's a nice OS, and eventually it's going to be something everybody's going to use. But I haven't encountered a lot of these issues, and I think if you're buying a new machine and getting new peripherals, it's probably going to be fine. You know, the hassle is getting your old stuff to work, and I can understand the resistance there.
You know, the push-pull in the other direction is a lot of the higher-end machines, people are looking at Macs, and the lower-end machines looking at Windows, and people are saying, am I going to spend $200 or $300 for a little notebook computer and equal amount for the operating system? I mean,
it's
crazy. So we're in an interesting time.
Speaking of photos, Allison, it's my understanding that you have discovered an instant digital printer for cell phones.
I hear she likes photos.
Yeah. It's okay. It's the Polaroid Pogo. Uses Bluetooth. It's very exciting.
Wake up, John.
John, I'm going to poke you virtually. Okay. Anyway, the idea is if you really need to write your location on the back of your photo,
and
okay,
you, really do.
You can do this. You can do this. Basically, it's the Polaroid Pogo. It's $150. And essentially, it prints out a 2x3 photo. And the actual little box is, you know, sort of small. It's like another camera. But the print quality is not that great because the color shifts a little bit and it's a little bit washed out. So, but if you're looking for, you know, a rough look at what you have and you want to just keep that and you want to do the GPS thing on the back, you know, in the old world style, this is awesome.
What about
getting
an old Polaroid camera? Just take a picture and have it spit right out.
So, the question I have for you, Allison, is
it's like XP.
If you were to take a photo where you're at right now, Allison, would the GPS
yes.
indicate Betty Ford Clinic?
No, it would be these fine studios.
Oh,
at
I see. Okay, we'll play along. We'll
She's
play along.
At the studios yeah. of WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts. John
Thank
Gilroy,
you.
Say happy birthday, Bill.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Thank you very
John.
Much. We're moving on to Mark. That's why Bill came today for these birthday
greetings. Exactly.
Here's Mark in New York, New York. Mark, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, folks. And your little conversation previously about Vista I thought was a good segue. I appreciate the help in advance also, so thank you. But I purchased a Dell laptop about 8 months ago, and yes, I have the wonderful Vista operating system on it. It came with 1 gig of RAM and a 120 hard drive. I was constantly having issues in the beginning, slowness, screens would drop all by itself, so forth and so on, and our my wonderful friends at Dell were at least somewhat interested in providing some help, depending on what representative I got at what point in time, and they were, one of them was trying to help and even sent out a 1 gig of RAM push to put the machine to 1.5 gigs. And while that seemed initially to provide some relief, I'm still having speed issues. I'm running Roadrunner high-speed internet cable, and I still can't get much performance out of this laptop. For the
John, John Gilroy, how do you spell relief?
Yeah, I spell it XP. Well, you know, there's
what you guys were going to say.
What was happening is that you could come in there probably with a box of shoes, and it would be Vista certified. You come up with an old machine from 1991, say Vista certified, and about a year ago, there was anything was Vista certified. And the whole idea of what is Vista certified was and is very fuzzy, and especially a machine with 1 gig in it, and if a notebook computer, you just can't bump up the RAM as these other machines, so you
right.
add one, and you don't get 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 1 = 1.5, because that's all it can hold. The only solution here is to downgrade to XP. I would scour around New York City. There's got to be people there who's selling boxes of XP, probably out in the corner of the street somewhere. Hey, come here. You want to watch? No. How about some XP? That's what I suggest you do. It's the only way around it. Allison, do you have any XP for this gentleman in New York?
Oh, my goodness. I wish I did. But, yeah, I've been telling folks you got to have a minimum of 2 gig of RAM to be at least hopeful that your Vista is going to be running fast enough. So, yeah, I think you got to downgrade, I think.
Okay. Mark, thank you very much for your call, and good luck to you. One of the other birthday gifts that Bill Harlow would like is the Nikon D3 Digital SLR. Why, Bill?
Well, Allison, this is a real camera.
Oh, that was a good slam. I like that one.
Yeah, but you don't have children that are pulling at your arm every 10 seconds.
And
that camera is a real camera.
And real cameras only cost $5,000, apparently.
Oh.
So, but no, this is obviously it's for professionals. But I got to play with one, and I was really impressed. And I really hope these technologies and advancements do trickle down to more affordable under $1,000 SLRs. So one of the things I love, big problem with a lot of pocket cameras, so they have a small sensor, which means that when you try to take low light pictures with no flash and have them look good, they get really grainy. And this one, it does an outstanding job. Most SLRs do, but this one you can really bump it up to like a film speed equivalent of like 12,000 and have a pretty clean image that'll compare to much better than film. 25,000 ISO is one I saw where you get a grainy image, you convert it to black and white, and it's a gorgeous black and white picture. And it's just, it's fast, you can do continuous shooting, it's just an outstanding camera. But the low light performance was a real highlight for me. That was an eye-opening experience.
And John Gilroy, Glasnost, why are you bringing up this term that has gone out of usage?
Yeah, it's gone out of usage
into
here.
Today's environment.
Well, the folks in downtown Washington, D.C., Allison, you know, friends are down there at the FCC, they have decided that they're going to take their hands away from whatever the ISPs do. Whatever the ISPs do is good for the country, and just sit back and have a cup of coffee. And if they start playing games with throttling your service, well, that's just the way it is. There are some people that object to some decisions the FCC has made about watching ISPs and controlling speed. And so there's a tool out there from the Max Planck Institute for Software Systems. It sounds great.
It sounds so official.
Sounds very official. Max Planck.
Really?
Anyway, it shows you if you're using BitTorrent, if it's being throttled back or not. And I predicted this before, and this is what's going to happen the next 10 years, is that this unlimited service is going to be like, years ago we used to have clean water. Years ago we used to have a dirt road here, and it's going to be all throttled back. And the FCC may just throw up their hands and say, well, what's good for the ISPs is good for the country.
I mean, I can only hope that people will throttle and that people abandon ship when maybe there's one provider that shows up and says, you know, we're not throttling, and everybody goes there, and then maybe that'll shake things up.
But free market
control.
That's, exactly. I think it's optimistic.
So Glasnost is a tool. You can get it from WAMU.org here and find out what the link is, and it'll check out and see who's playing around with your connections.
It's the computer guys and gal. Let's move on to Jimmy in Centerville, Virginia. Jimmy is no longer there, so we will try John, who is in Kerbal. Northern Virginia. John, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. How are you all today?
Good.
This question is for Bill, the recovering Mac genius, or is that former Mac genius?
Or wannabe genius.
Yeah, don't listen to him.
Today he's birthday boy.
Exactly.
Happy birthday, Bill.
Thank you.
The question I've got, I'm a network security engineer, and I've got a client who normally we do full disk encryption and content encryption for the Windows side.
Right.
This client has 800 Macintoshes that need to be encrypted, and unfortunately the solution I use doesn't handle OS X right now. PGP just came out with a new version of their software that claims to do full disk encryption for Macs. So I wondered if you had any experience with it or if you'd taken a look at it yet.
Now, I haven't taken a look at it myself personally. For most of my clients, I mean, they're much smaller organizations. They don't need anything that advanced. They don't do full disk encryption, at least not on the boot disk. So they'll generally use something like Apple's File Vault technology, which encrypts your entire home directory. Many of them, because you know that even that has some issues with reliability, a lot of people who do encrypt, they just make an encrypted disk image, and they store their data there and then lock that down.
Okay, so this apparently has pre-boot authorization and authentication and so forth. I'm just interested in trying to find a solution. Are there any other commercial-grade solutions that you would recommend that we take a look at?
Off the top of my head, I'm sorry, I can't think of one for you.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
And thank you very much for your call. You, too, can call us at 800-433-8850, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Allison, speaking of not being able to find out where you are, Google Maps for mobile has apparently just come out for BlackBerries and other Java-enabled phones. You find this of significance?
Yes, because it actually will tell you where the closest train or bus or mass, you know, basically public transportation and, of course, restaurants on your mobile. And essentially, it will also give you directions. And so it's what, you know how all of us go to our computers before we leave to go on a trip,
yes,
just to make sure that we know where we're going, but print out directions and so on, and then we compare it with the GPS that's in the car.
Yes.
Well, this is very this might stop
somebody
you from
does that somewhere.
Getting run over.
You know how you wear an orange hat before you go to baseball games? Oh yeah.
No, I just trust my GPS master personally. Do what it says.
Watch out. But this is so cool because spur of the moment, you want to hop a train or a metro, go off, do something in an unknown city. Here it is. It's on your cell.
Wait, you're a married woman. You're a married woman, Allison. Be careful.
All right. Well, if you have two children and so on,
well,
it's not.
You're motivated then, huh?
Well.
But this is the thing for you.
This is pretty cool. This is. is very cool. So it's going to be coming out shortly on other cell phones, but right now it's BlackBerry and Java-enabled phones.
Here's an email we got from Simon, who says, over the past few months, you guys have talked about how bad Vista is. Oh, but I already asked this question of you. But you haven't really told us why people are scared of it. John Gilroy, what problems have people experienced using Vista that causes them to be scared of it?
Well, I think the earlier caller, they were shoehorning Vista into the wrong hardware in the early stages. But mostly the problems involve drivers. In other words, if Bill's sitting at home and he's playing his computer game 6 hours a night with these people in India or who knows where, and he has his beefed up video card and he tries to move to Vista, it may not work with this special NVIDIA video card.
You know, poor performance or crashes or who knows what.
And so,
that's right.
So we see people resisting it for that's a primary reason. I mean, and system engineers and big companies, they have plenty of headaches, and this is at least they don't want to invite more headaches.
Yeah, they're looking at what does it add for them now.
Yeah,
we're going to take another short break. When we come back, more of your phone calls and email for the computer guys and gal. The lines are busy, so shoot us an email to kojo@wamu.org. I'm Kojo Namdi. Coming up at 1, accusations of techno-doping swirl around swimming pools worldwide. Find out why a high-tech swimsuit is turning Olympic competition upside down. Plus, hear the true crime story of a mediocre artist who became a master art forger. Today at 1 on the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt McCleskey. At 2 o'clock today, it's Tell Me More with Michelle Martin.
Next time on Tell Me More, as we continue our special broadcast from New York, we catch up with the Mocha Moms of New York City as they talk about raising kids in the city that never sleeps. I'm Michelle Martin. That's next time on Tell Me More from NPR News.
That's coming up at 2 o'clock, right after the second hour of today's Kojo Namdi Show here on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from CDWG. With thousands of technology products in stock, they're there to get public sector customers what they need when they need it on purchasing vehicles specific to their organizations. CDWG, the right technology right away.
WAMU 88.5 and Wolf Trap are giving away 15 pairs of tickets to the NSO at Wolf Trap, including Cheers for Tchaikovsky on July 10th and An Evening with Kiri Takanawa on July 11th. More information is at WAMU.org under calendar.
Partly sunny skies through the afternoon, a 30% chance of scattered showers or isolated thunderstorms, highs in the lower 80s, currently 76 degrees in Northwest Washington at 1243 as the Kojo Namdi Show continues.
With our computer guys and gal, our computer gal is Allison Druin. She is director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. She joins us from studios in Amherst, Massachusetts. In our Washington studio is Bill Harlow. He is a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. And John Gilroy is director of business development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. And he's seeking to replace Bill Gates, who is stepping down as the CEO of Microsoft.
He has Send him my resume.
He has submitted his resume.
Sure.
My arms aren't small enough.
And the response, he got from his resume is, who the heck are you? We move on. Here's Diane in Bethesda, Maryland. Diane, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I have a question about the iPhone. The problem that I presently have with it is that in areas like D.C. where you have to use hands-free, if you're actually using it as a phone and you know, relying on the earbuds that they provide for you, I can't hear even when it's turned all the way up. I hear fine without the earbuds. And I've gone into the Apple store to tell me they've heard this before, but, you know, it seems like if it's a phone, it's a really basic function that we're missing out on.
Well, on my iPhone, I've used the earbuds mostly indoors. I don't use that in the car because I think there's some law where you can't have both ears plugged. So I have a Bluetooth headset.
Same here.
And the one I use is the Jawbone, which works really well. It noise cancels, so when I'm in the car, people don't hear the background. And it's got a nice fit, and I can hear pretty clearly over it. It definitely is louder than the earbuds for me. But one thing to look on the iPhone as well is just to make sure you don't have the volume limiter turned on.
No, I don't.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure of that. But that's what I do. I tried different earbuds. There are other ones out there that work with the iPhone. There are adapters that let you use any headphones you want. And just look at some of the Jawbone or other Bluetooth headsets out there.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your call. We got this email from Scott. in Knoxville, Maryland, who says, do the computer guys think Apple is likely to introduce a true UMPC given the fierce interest in products like the Asus EEE PC? What form do they think it might take? Maybe a Super Newton?
You know, I don't know. Part of me thinks that the iPhone sort of takes care of a lot of the UMPC people. I mean, it does have a great web browser and a nice email experience. And it's going to have applications soon. So it's going to cover a lot of that. As far as an ultra mobile laptop like the Triple E, I don't know. I mean, the MacBook Air is pretty light. That might, you know, cover it for some people. And I just think the market's probably too small for Apple to consider, you know, fragmenting, you know, their market share as it stands now. They're doing pretty well, and I think they're going to focus on what they continue to do well.
And Allison Druin, we mentioned that Bill Gates is stepping down and that John Gilroy will not be replacing him.
What have we learned?
What have we learned from Bill Gates?
Well, obviously not to make better software, but no, we are serious. Sorry. But he did teach the marketplace something actually quite valuable, which is to decouple the software from the hardware. Okay, so essentially, you know, by creating an operating system that more people can actually program, he got way out ahead of the curve. Okay, and now, of course, quality is quality, and so now it's coming back to bite everybody. But it's very interesting because he did some business moves that have taught and changed the whole industry for many years.
Indeed, he has. And here is Nick in Columbia, Maryland, who has a, well, Bill Gates-related issue. Nick, go ahead, please.
Yes, I just wanted to comment. I'm an independent technology consultant here in Columbia, Maryland, and I often have clients that have Vista on their machines, and they complain about the slowness. And what I don't think a lot of users realize is that when you buy a new machine from, say, any one of the big box retailers or the online retailers like Dell or HP, not only do you get the Vista pre-installed, but you have a lot of other what's called bloatware, mm-hmm. other software installed that is really slowing down the machine more than the operating system. And when people say just to downgrade to XP, what you're doing is you're doing a clean install and removing that bloatware. And if you did a clean install with Vista, you'd see pretty much the same performance increase, at least on newer machines.
That's a good point.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say, you know, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I definitely agree with that. I mean, it's a good point. And I think that reminds me, I think Dell and some of their premium machines, you can actually get that as an option, no bloatware. As I don't know if they charge you for that, but you can get it, you know.
Pay
nice
more for less.
Exactly.
It's a good way for a Dell to pick up a couple extra bucks, though, you know.
That's why they do it. It's not about you. It's about Dell.
Yeah.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Thank you very much for your call, Nick. On now to Josue in Herndon, Virginia. Josue, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. My question was about the Zune and if it's a competitor to the iPod. I know that they came out with Zune 2, the second version, and I was wondering if it's a good choice for someone to get that product.
I've used them. They're fine devices. I think, you know, the iPod's sort of the Kleenex of the industry now. It's the name brand that everybody gets. But, yeah, there's a lot of other good devices out there. And if you're, you know, you're not sold on iTunes, or if you, you know, you're just ripping CDs, or, you know, you like what's in the Zune marketplace and you like some of the features there, you know, it's a good device. There's no, you know, nothing to be embarrassed about getting one. It's not an iPod, but that's fine.
How about Creative Zen?
Yeah, that was. I haven't played with them a lot lately, but they were a heavy hitter for quite a while. They made a ton of different products. The other one I hear about is, I think Samsung makes some ones that go over pretty well too. They have like nice color screens, a decent interface, and can play video as well.
Indeed, Allison Druin, you wanted to talk about the Samsung Instinct, did you not?
Yeah, that actually just came out. Again, you know, as sort of a competitor to iPhone, people are talking about it. It's really got this great haptic feedback. So, in other words, when you're touching, it's got this 3+ inch touchscreen, and then when you're pressing on it, you can actually feel it push back at you and so you have a better ability to sort of click on things and so on. Great GPS, folks. I know you're really worried about that, but really bad on the web design.
Yeah,
so
like
if you're into
right there.
Yeah, if you're really into the open web, this may not be for you. But $100 all you can eat plan. So you know, so it's good and it's bad.
Joe Sway, thank you very much for your call. John Gilroy, Facebook has finally edged out MySpace in the number of hits last month or something like that?
Stunning. 123 million hits last month for Facebook. They're finally going by I'm just stunned. I can't believe that many people are
You're
at Facebook.
Speechless.
I am speechless. I mean, what we see happening is that the younger generation, people like me and Kojo, they're spending more time watching videos and instead of television, and they're spending more time, I guess they go to Facebook and say, hey, Kojo, what do you want to watch on YouTube? And they go there and they discuss it. It's a phenom. It's an amazing. Anytime you get 123 million people doing anything, and think of the audiences for advertising there. It's an amazing situation. I just can't believe it.
There are more than 123 million people listening to this broadcast right now. Are you aware of that?
Correct. That's amazing. Glad.
Thank you very much. Let's go to one of our privileged listeners. Here's Robert in Frederick, Maryland. Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Oh, hi, everyone. Well, I have to say first off that I am a diehard a PC user, but came into ownership of a very a well taken care of old Mac. I think it's a G3 or PowerPC G3.
Low mileage.
Well preserved, pickled,
or Apple. I said. But I have to tell you from the kid's perspective. I have a 5-year-old. I bought a handful of games secondhand, and she has loved it. It has been. A phenomenally easy system for her to use. There's a lot of the little intuitive things, with Macs that have been great. But I've run into a bit of a problem, I guess, with the backwards compatibility of older Apple products. We used to have the joke in my circles where, you want to upgrade, buy a new one.
you're fading in and out, Robert, so you might want to try to be as stationary as you can.
Okay. Is this any better?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Well, the issue that I've run into now is I've got this great system for her, and I'm trying to get some of the older games to work on it. But at first, I got the error message about how it needed to have, I guess, what's called OS Classic or OS 9 Classic system files installed. So, Simon and I have done all that sort of fun jazz of reformatting the hard drive and partitioning it, and finding somebody who has an old OS 9 disk and installing it. And now I have an issue where when I go to play these games, or I try to start these games for her, they start running, but instead of playing the game, I get like QuickTime or something else pops up and nothing else happens. So am I kind of at a dead stop here, or is there, I'm just sort of looking, I guess, for maybe a hint in a direction I could go.
Yeah, I guess it really depends on the game. I mean, a lot of them, what you did as far as like having to reformat, you shouldn't have to do. Normally, if you have like OS 10 on there, you can put 9 on there, and Classic just works. But the thing about the Classic environment is it really is like running another operating system on top of what you already have. So maybe that's why you're seeing things like QuickTime or other things come up automatically, or it might be part of the installer for these old games that's trying to run those. Now, if you've gone through the trouble of putting OS 9 on there, it may be easier just to like reboot into OS 9 and run the games that way, and you probably won't have any of these issues.
Okay. I try that, actually, because the hard drive's partition, it's like a 50-50 split, and I have, OS X is the default, and then OS 9 is secondary, and I forget what the button is on the keyboard when you start it up, but, you hold that down, and you have the two boot disk options. But what ends up happening is it won't let me select the OS 9 drive as a disk. I mean, should I just get a separate hard drive for it, or should it work in theory?
It should work in theory, and the other thing to do is when you're in OS 10, go to the system preferences and try telling it in the startup disk preferences to choose the OS 9 disk.
Hey, Robert, we do have to move on. Thank you very much for your call, but Mac now has OS 10.6 Snow Leopard, Bill?
Yes, Snow Leopard. So the thing with this is Apple is claiming that they're not so much focused on new features and new applications to throw at you, things that you obviously see, but it's an under-the-hood freshening to make the system run faster and more reliably. So some of the highlights are Grand Central, technology that allows the newer multiprocessor machines, so the Core Duo or a machine with multiple Core Duo processors. It's hard to program to use those efficiently, so Grand Central helps manage that so you're taking better advantage of the machine. Another great feature is it's 64-bit, so you can have lots of memory in there. So down the line, if you want to have 16 terabytes, which should be enough for Vista, I'm thinking, for most people, that's not a huge deal, but I'm thinking if you're doing a lot of, iMovie stuff or have a huge photo library that could be handy. And the other thing I thought was really cool is something called OpenCL. A lot of higher-end computers have a nice graphics card, and if you're not a gamer or doing 3D work, it sits there kind of going unused. And the idea of this is that graphics card can be used to help calculate some things and make the whole computer run faster.
And we move on to Luther in Bay Bridge, Maryland. Luther on the Bay Bridge in Maryland. Luther, are you on the air? Go ahead, please. Of course, you're probably off the Bay Bridge by now, but go ahead.
I just came off, so I'm going to pull over so I can hear you better.
Try not to jump. Go ahead.
I have a niece, and we were going to buy her a laptop, and we were probably going to get something from Dell. And I was listening to the stuff you had about Vista, and I was kind of wondering what are the minimum that I should be getting to make sure that actually, you know, is going to run correctly and all. She's just getting ready to go to college and needs a nice machine to do.
Allison Druin?
He just was referring to me. Don't worry about it. You really do need a minimum of 2 gig of RAM on a laptop, and that's gonna bump you into a more high end kind of laptop. Am I right, John?
No, I think it's pretty standard. I think what you want to do here is have your niece contact the university and ask what their preferences are, because some universities are fastidious about the operating systems there. And I think that's the first step, contact a college. And then if you do want to go with Vista, a minimum of 2 megs is going to be probably. And right about now, I think most of the machines they sell, they've gone 3-9 months. You know,
Allison is sitting there at a college. Turn around and ask somebody.
Exactly.
Grab someone.
No, but you can get a really good deal through the college, too. So you most colleges. Especially software. Yes, especially. But go ahead.
Also, you had something. There was a question about bloatware. I didn't understand what that was.
Oh, that's all the extra programs. It's sort of like adding on the advertisements. No, it's they think that you're going to need this extra tool. You know, if you stand on one foot and hold your breath. I mean, it's just. It's stuff that you really don't need because you haven't really bought it. It's just there extra so you can try it out and love it.
It's John Gilroy showing up in a suit and tie to do a radio show. This one looks great. Okay.
Now, the classic bloatware, Luther, is something like Norton Antivirus. They'll give it to you for free for 90 days, and then they'll just beat you up every hour to buy it. And so that's the classic bloatware, and Dell will get $10 for that install.
Right, or try MSN or all this other stuff. They're basically advertisements.
Luther, thank you.
It's really advertisements.
All right, well, thank you guys very much.
And thank you for calling, Luther, and good luck to you. We got an email from Larry in Washington, D.C., who says, I found some great music on streaming stations on the Internet, and I'd like to play it through my stereo without moving my computer to be close to the stereo. Is there some kind of network box that will allow me to tune into a stream and channel it into the stereo?
There are a few, and the one that I've heard about the most and actually had first-hand experience with is the Roku SoundBridge. And, you know, you can sit on a table or put it in your entertainment center. It can get online. It can stream internet radio stations. It's got a, you know, nice display and easy-to-use remote. That's probably the easiest way to go. Just keep in mind that it won't play everything. You know, there's some things that might be real player. I don't know if it can play that. But typical radio stations you can play easily through iTunes are usually a safe bet. They'll work on the SoundBridge.
Roku. From Japan.
Roku. The guys who make that new Netflix box.
Bill Harlow is a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. He is a former Mac genius, and most importantly, today is his birthday. Again, Bill Harlow, happy birthday.
Thank you. What'd you get me?
Maybe now this time you will come back next month.
I'm going to keep asking.
Allison Druill is our computer gal. She's director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. She joins us from studios in Amherst, Massachusetts, not from the Betty Ford Center, as John Gilroy was claiming.
Thank you very
Allison,
much.
Thank you very much for joining us. And John Gilroy is director of business development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. He is headed for the Betty Ford Center. John, thank you for joining
us. As the show ends, I mean,
thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi. Coming up tomorrow on the Kojo Namdi Show, suburban water woes, why local residents are dealing with water main breaks, sewage spills, and significant rate hikes. Plus, Giorgio Armani hugs a tree and JCPenney goes green. As fashion designers embrace eco-friendly material, a look at whether bamboo blouses and recycled rubber shoes are really environmentally friendly. The first in our series on clothes and culture. The Kojo Namdi Show, noon till 2 tomorrow on W.